Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are they a top six team in the West, off the top of your head? What do we even expect from them this season? Like, what's even the expectation?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I don't know what to expect. Like, I think the expectations for them last year were way too high. Even prior to De'Aaron getting there, I thought the expectations were way too high. They were a 34-48 team with, you know, Wemby being shut down. And De'Aaron ultimately having that hand surgery. Can they get into the top six? Man, Minnesota, L.A., Denver, the Lakers, Rockets, Thunder.
ZZ Sickness says they're going to be better than the Kings. Would you say they're better than the Kings right now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's a difference right now of six games. Could I see San Antonio at 50 wins next year? I think so. 48 to 50 wins. That's anywhere from 8 to 6. At least based on last year, that's anywhere from 8 to 6. I could absolutely see that. Are the Clippers falling out of the top 6? Are the Nuggets falling out of the top 6? Are the Lakers falling out of the top 6?
Lakers, yes. Minnesota, I could see that as well. I'm pretty high on the Clippers as far as a regular season team after adding Beal.
I like the Clippers. Denver's a regular season team I'm struggling with a little bit. I think Denver's
low-key back.
Really?
Okay. Not officially, but so, if things go the right way, I could see them being contenders this season again.
I think Denver is significantly more dangerous in the playoffs now.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You mentioned the Clippers are a regular season team. Like, that's not what you said. You said you're high on the Clippers in the regular season.
Basically, they're a regular season team. I'm expecting them to go make a run in the playoffs.
I think that's how I feel about Denver, but the other way around. Denver, I don't know what they're going to do in the regular season, but I think they could win a couple of series in the playoffs. So maybe that puts Denver in the seventh spot. But I can, but 48 to 50 wins for San Antonio with De'Aaron healthy, with Wemby healthy, with you know, the rookie and the second year guy. Yeah, man, I think San Antonio's good. I'm not doing win loss totals for Sacramento. I'm done making myself look stupid in that regard. But I still think I maintain it. I've said it all week, and I'll ride off into the sunset at 4 o'clock, saying it again. I think this is a good basketball team. I don't know how good. I think they're a hell of a lot better than 40-42. I'll say that. Are they a 50-win team? Are they as talented as San Antonio? Probably not. But could they be a 46-win team? Sure. I think some things would have to go right for them to be I think things would have to go really, really well for them to be anything above a 45-46-win team. You start getting into 48s, 49s, 50s. You probably had, you know, a really big season from Keegan Murray. Maybe Neek is even better than his summer league show, better than we predicted. I think you have a lot of things going right for Sacramento should they wind up winning somewhere around that total, somewhere around that 47, 48, 49 total.
I think they'll be an average basketball team this year that kind of just is locked into the play-in most of the year, and we'll see where the chips fall once the season ends there. Like, I think they're good enough to just stick around and be average, but like, if they were to get 45 or 46, I feel like that tells us, okay, like, there's a little bit something more to this roster than we thought before the season.
Yeah. Okay. So you have them more around, like, 41, 42.
Yeah.
I gotta believe they're better than that. I have to. I've spoke too highly about too many players to say that they're not better than that. Hold on. What'd Michael say? Vegas has San Antonio at 43.5. Man, I went way over that. Goodness gracious. Well, I don't know ball like Las Vegas does.
Wemby's ready to go. Like, I take the over on that. Do we believe Wemby's ready? Like, he's here? Like, he's a top player in this league now? Or is he just all, not potential, because, like, he's really good now, but just more so, is he ready to be the guy now? Ready to lead the Spurs to wins with De'Aaron Fox? Like, are we ready for that?
I think so.
If that's the case, then I think, yeah, they'll hit more than 43.5.
Yeah, I think he is. As long as there's no setbacks, yeah, I think San Antonio has handled this. I think San Antonio has handled the Wemby situation, and truth be told, I think they handled the De'Aaron Fox situation really, really well. They have their rookie year; they kind of eased Wemby into things. The second year, a little bit more. When something was off, they shut it down. They allowed De'Aaron to play a little bit with the Spurs. It always made sense for Fox to shut down in San Antonio. They were obviously going nowhere, and he was playing through, you know, the hand issues. It always made sense to shut him down, and they ultimately did. But I think they handled him, allowing him to get there, kind of get his feet wet as a San Antonio Spur. I think that was the perfect move for that organization. I think it was a great move for De'Aaron Fox. I did wonder if when the Spurs won the lottery, did their thoughts on De'Aaron change? And maybe they did. But I don't think it results in them not offering him a contract extension. I think it would make him more expandable later on after they've gotten into the contract. Of course, you would need Steph Castle to develop. You would need your rookie to be the star that you think that he is. Like, you would need a lot of things to happen. You would need a couple of things to happen before you were just willing to move on from De'Aaron Fox. De'Aaron Fox is a really, really high-level scorer, and I think he is incredibly suited for the role that he is in now with the San Antonio Spurs. Allow Wemby to have all of the attention, do all of that stuff, and just go out there and play ball. It's interesting you're not high on the Lakers. The Lakers roster isn't that much different. Plus, you have Luka Doncic for the entire year.
Yeah.
Of course, there is.
I'm pretty out on DeAndre Ayton, though, and I think the rest of the league is. Like, DeAndre Ayton's a good player, but I wonder how much of it is not empty calories, but just there's not a real true impact there. It's a collection of guys with talent, I feel. That's,
DeAndre.
They won't go far in the postseason or anything like that.
DeAndre has to.
Like, DeAndre Ayton was probably the best option at that position for you, but it's not like, oh yeah, we got DeAndre Ayton, we're set.
No, he does have to. If DeAndre could just be. Remember, they didn't have anyone in that position last year post Anthony Davis.
Real quick, I don't even have to screen this call. We got John from Connecticut. You want to talk to him? You need to be more enthusiastic. John, what's up?
No, I'm trying to think of what he could be calling to.
Who knows? I didn't screen him. Who knows? John, you're on the line.
I'm just calling in because I've been clamoring from the chatty house to call in this week. I've had four people from the chatty house go into the DM saying, yo, Damian's by himself this week, Jake. When you coming on? I was like, I don't know. Me and Dame, maybe we're beefing right now. He ain't feeling it. I don't know. But they told me to call in.
Beef with Jake Gaydon is crazy. Like just me and Jake Gaydon aren't vibing with each other is amazing. What's up, man? I thought I was afraid you were calling to say something about the Yankees or UConn or something.
Well, there's nothing going on with them. You know, it's been the easiest, chillest week of sports. Like, okay, by the way, the fact that Kenny left you this week on the week when there was, like, nothing to talk about sports-wise, that's cold, okay?
Yeah. Jake, real quick, Jake, what if I told you that Damian was leaving Kenny next week?
Okay, I would still not feel bad.
See? I'm rooting for Kenny to have the worst week of his life next week. Just the absolute worst. Because what he won't have to deal with next week is that meeting that Jesse and I had to deal with. What he won't have to deal with, in addition to me being out, is the big event I had to show up to last night. He don't have to worry about none of that. So I hope he sits here in this seat scrambling for something. At least he'll have baseball back. Jake, I didn't even have baseball.
I'll be honest with you. The past 2 days has been the quietest days in sports because nothing happened. You got WNBA, but like, What, we going to talk about Caitlin Clark for 4 hours? Like, what's going on with this?
Yeah, she's not even playing, man. That was a bummer. I was kind of happy that the Dame Lillard story hit, because that was like, hey, there's a that's a good little story. Then I realized, yeah, there's not really much legs to that because Dame Lillard isn't playing next year.
Well, you kept on talking about LeBron and Kobe the whole entire week, or MJ, or whatever it was. And I think that conversation got talked about a lot this week. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, that was an unintentional conversation that got completely out of control, that we realized, well, the next time we're struggling for something, just bring up LeBron. Because I didn't know people didn't know. I thought LeBron was the greatest player of all time. That sparked a whole thing that I wasn't even remotely prepared for.
No, neither was I, because I think that the conversation for both are very good. It's just some people are just not informed. Let's just put it that way. We'll leave it at that.
Jake, what are you up to this week, man? Are you working? Yeah. Are you traveling? What are you doing?
No, I'm chilling. We're in Sac. We just got done with a little quick 9 holes over in Elk Grove. Shout out to Emerald Lake. Sorry if anybody's been down there. You know, it's the perfect little easy nine-hole course that we rock with it. Watching a lot of Summer League. Man,
yeah.
My guy Nick Clifford, all right? Can we talk about how ridiculous this kid has been the past week, and the fact that ESPN came out and said he's been the best player in Summer League? Like, it's not surprising. He's always risen to the occasion, but the fact that he's doing it now on the biggest stage, I'm excited to see it. The question I have for you, which I think is a good one, is this.
Okay.
Who's starting? What's the starting five for the Kings this year, right? Like, are we really comfortable with Keon coming off the bench and playing limited minutes off the bench because of the amount of salary that you have in that starting lineup? Or is there a conversation to be had with maybe DeMar or Zach about coming off the bench? And what does that second unit look like?
I definitely don't think DeMar or Zach comes off the bench. I think the starting lineup is pretty easy. It's Dennis, it's DeMar, it's Zach, it's Keegan, and it's Domas.
Simple. And then what do you do in the backup? You're looking for a backup point guard, right? Ben Simmons, I'll pass. That's between me and you.
Sure.
But, like, you have Malik at the shooting guard. What, you're going to put Keon at the three and switch him back off with Malik, and then you put Neek at the four, and then whoever your five is, if that's Max or Drew Eubanks, sure. Like, sure. What does that look like?
Who was your backup point guard?
Who's my backup point guard?
I feel like you skipped the point guard and went straight to the shooting guard, the two forwards, and the centers. The big question is, who's your backup point guard?
I think Russ ends up being here. I really do. I just think that he wants to be in California, and the fact that he could be 45 minutes away from his home in L.A., I think he'd be very happy about that.
I'm with you.
Ben Simmons, I don't know if I like that fit. The difference is, what I'm intrigued by is, like, I think Russ, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, was averaging like 20 minutes a game last year for the Nuggets. And that was, split duty, of course, a lot throughout the season. But, like, is Russ playing okay with playing like 16 minutes a game, right? Or an 18 minutes a game? Or do we really think this is going to be a split duty type thing with Dennis? Like,
I think
the questions you have.
I think Russ is far more interested in being closer to his family than he is worrying about the amount of minutes he'll play. And I think he'll comfortably play 15 to 20. But ultimately, and I'm with you, I think Russell Westbrook does, because it's a dream I will not let go. I think Russell Westbrook does wind up on this team. But ultimately, I think what we might see is Malik Monk as the backup point guard. Keon Ellis is the two guard. Neek is the backup three. Maybe Max is either the backup four. Maybe Isaac Jones runs some of the backup four. And then depending on where Max is at, if he's not the four, he's the five. And then you have, whether it's Eubanks, Saric, whatever, playing in that other role.
And then that leaves us with our former first-round pick at Devin Carter, how he fits into the mix. Like, that's
he could sit in his stupid little outfit at the end of the bench.
Okay.
I'm not a
He might have time to go to Turkey now then. That sounds better.
Well, all right. Maybe. Maybe he does. I don't know. I can't find, and it's not Devin's fault. I've tried to say that. Oh, Devin should not have been drafted here. There's just no place to work him into this rotation, Jake.
That's the crazy thing about it, though, Dame. Like, you look at Devin, and Devin targeted the Kings last year. Like, he was high on them coming out of the draft. He was like, yeah, this is the spot I want to be at. That's the crazy thing. Like, that was a destination location for him in terms of a team to play for. And the fact that it has been anything but since then is wild.
Yeah, it's there's a variety of reasons why this was just a tough spot for Devin. But Jake, I love you, brother. I appreciate you. Thanks for calling and chatting with me for a few minutes. I'm confident you're going to get a call to be in these studios next week.
I love it, my guys. Hey, have a great weekend. Have a great vacay, my guy.
All right. Thanks, Jake. Appreciate you, brother. We'll come back. That is John from Connecticut. We'll come back. Sean Cunningham, KCR3, the godfather of sports media here in Sacramento. He joins us next on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're going to close out this week strong with our man Sean Cunningham, who is out in the wilderness. He grabbed his laptop, went to a Starbucks in Placerville while on a camping trip. Sean, I have now, moving forward, referring to you as the godfather of sports media in Sacramento. We've also determined that you are just the GOAT. I know you don't believe that. I know you called me delusional last night. You are the best to do it in this market when it comes to covering sports. So those are your titles moving forward. You may accept them or you may not, but that's how we will be referring to you from now on.
It may be a delusional compliment, but it's a compliment nonetheless. So to have someone like you say that, it means a lot. And I'm not worthy of such praise, but I'll take it.
Oh, you very much are. And speaking of delusional, let's talk Summer League. Because there's a lot of us that are delusional right now as the Sacramento Kings are headed into the semifinals of the Summer League against the Toronto Raptors tomorrow afternoon. You are notoriously the most level-headed guy who covers this basketball team. You have covered this team through the good and the bad, through 1140 to KCRA and everywhere in between. But you have always covered them with a very level head. There are a lot of Kings fans excited about these two young players that we've been watching for the last week or so, Neek Clifford and Maxime Renaud. What is your impression of these guys at first glance?
I think I'm a bigger – I said this even on draft day. I think I'm probably a bigger fan of them as people than I am as them as athletes, because we're still learning about them as athletes. I've spent a lot of time – over these past few weeks getting to know them as people, be it directly with those people, with them themselves, their families, their coaches, people who've been along the ride, their agents. And there's not much that you're going to find that you're not going to like about these two guys in particular, Neek Clifford and Maxime Renaud. And it's very infectious personality. So you can see that box being checked right off the bat. And then, course, on the basketball side, I mean, I was honestly don't spend a whole lot of time watching Colorado State basketball. Stanford didn't really give you much reason to watch over these past few years. So getting a kind of familiar with some of the things that they did at the collegiate level doesn't always let you know how they're going to translate to the NBA level, but cautious optimism with what they're bringing to the table. I mean, Summer League is haphazard basketball. So for people who to get excited about it, your fans do that, please get excited over it. But keep in mind, like, all I'm looking for when I watch a guy play, I'm not looking for points scored. I'm looking at confidence. Do they look like they belong? Do they have a command? Do they have a feel? Do they mesh well with teammates that they've known for 5 minutes? And I think for both of these guys, they check a lot of those boxes, particularly with you know, it's funny, like, Neek is like plug and play right away. I know you're hearing the term Swiss Army knife being thrown around a lot. I was guilty of it myself. I had to go back and watch that first game because I thought Summer League head coach Depeche Mystery was like upset at him not being aggressive enough on the offensive end. And I used that as a question to Neek in that game. Like, he gets his path, he gets kind of criticized for not having strong confidence, not capitalizing, using his talents, trying to be kind of an alpha out there. And so I'm like, man, I'm seeing it in game one. Like, you weren't very aggressive. And now here's your coach saying you're not being very aggressive. And I think when I asked him the question, I kind of pissed him off. And when I followed up, I still have to put out the interview, the one-on-one I did with Neek before I left Vegas. I'll have that out probably Saturday when I get back to SAC. But one of the things that was, I brought that up. I said, I think I kind of pissed you off, and it's Dip's fault. But this is what I went back and looked at, and it really shown itself in game two against the Bulls. He's seeing Maxime Reynaud get off to a hot start. In the game against the Bulls, he sees Devin Carter get off to a hot start, and he's setting up his teammates. He's absolutely letting his teammates have a moment. Mm-hmm. And then getting into the second half of both of those games, Neek has some moments of himself, especially with closing out a game. And so those are really cool moments to see. I think if you've watched any of the summer league, those guys, I mean, I know Maxime sat out the game with wrist soreness, but he's so damn loud. You can hear him throughout the entire gym. He's calling out offensive sets that the other team is doing.
Yeah,
it's just, you don't see that at the summer league level at all. Mm-hmm. You rarely see it in the NBA level from veteran players. Mm-hmm. But to see a guy like that come out of the second round, come out of Stanford, his smarts, his personality, his quirkiness, it's all well documented. But to see him call that stuff out to guys that he's been teammates with for 5 minutes is like, you don't see that at summer league level. So there are things to get excited about. I hope people are excited because it's been a lot of fun.
One thing that's funny about that, Sean, is one, that's the sign of a really smart basketball player who watches film. Two, it pisses the other team off. It happens probably like they'll motion to each other, but when someone yells out the play, oh, it pisses them off so much. Kara used to do that for the Sacramento Monarchs regularly, and I watched players like Cappy Pondexter, Diana Taurasi, Katie Smith just get so agitated because she's keep horns down, they're running it, and she would just yell it out, and they'd get so furious. So the fact that a rookie who's a game into his NBA career in summer league is doing that is tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely, and I can absolutely remember those moments too. And I'll share a funny story. I remember Tamika Catchings. You know, it was a lot of moments where she'd be hurt, and I was behind their bench one game. Usually, I was behind the Monarchs bench, and those very words that you're talking about from Kara and Yolanda Griffith both. This is, they know exactly, we have to mix it up. They know exactly what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And getting apps, just laying into her teammates and coaches using some colorful language that I can't use at a Starbucks. Yeah. On the air. But
yeah.
It was, I totally get it. And it's funny to see the reaction to players when he's doing it, because you see their heads immediately turn violently towards him because it's so jarring to hear a guy that loud on the court. So yeah, it's fun to watch. I hope fans have been able to catch that on the broadcast. I don't know if it totally comes through, but when you're in that little Cox Pavilion at Thomas, next to Thomas and Mac, mm-hmm. it just echoes throughout the building.
One of the words that I think we've used to describe Neek the most is comfortable. He looks absolutely comfortable on a basketball floor. Maybe he's a little too passive for coaches' needs here in summer league, but we've seen other players, and we'll get to him in a minute, who don't look comfortable, whether it's with the ball in their hand, whether it's trying to execute, whether it's doing different things. Neek just looks like a basketball player to me.
100%. Plug and play. Do whatever you want him to do. I mean, he's out there doing it on both ends of the floor, which is tremendous. And look, I'm not trying to pick on Devin Carter here. He has a...
Well, you knew where I was going.
Yeah, he has a tall task. It's a nice segue because he has a tall task ahead of him. He's has to be something that he's not. And he's being asked to be that. And that could be a pathway to the NBA, at least with the Sacramento Kings, that could find him minutes. But realizing that he's just been a combo guard his whole life and not a point guard. And even talking to him and people around him, like I feel like that Moneyball quote in my mind where you have the guy trying to get accustomed to first base and he's like, it's not that hard. And it's like, yeah, it's incredibly hard. And that's essentially the same type of message that's being told to Devin. Like, no, this isn't easy for you to have to get them into sets and adapt to something you're not, but also try to hunt for your shots as well. And you're being told, you know, take shots. It can be difficult, and you kind of see him going through some of the ebbs and flows with that. For someone like Neek getting in there, his role stays the same, whether he's guarding 1-4, whether he's playing a point guard situation or getting the offense going. He knows what it's like to be a point guard. He looks so much – I know I hate comparisons at this time, but, like, it reminds me of like a point forward, like a Grant Hill, like a Scottie Pippen, especially for what they do defensively on the glass as well. I mean, they just fill up a stat sheet, and they don't have to go out there and have these 20-point ball games to see how much they're impacting winning, impacting so many of the second chance opportunities, hockey assists, going out there especially and just playing solid defense. And we know what they can do on the glass, him and Devin both. So he gets to do what he does. Devin's being asked to do something radically different, and you kind of see some of the ebbs and flows to that. And hopefully, you know, he's still going to continue to play in these games. A lot of guys who played last year and were high draft picks and have played a little bit in the season get to this point in summer league, and they might sit out a game or two, and that doesn't seem to be the case.
Sean, I can't see his place on the team. I just can't. I can't figure it out. Yeah. Like, I don't like the backup point guard thing. I don't like any sort of point guard thing for him. I think if the Kings truly need a backup point guard, they need to go sign one. Whether it's Russ, whether it's Chris Paul, Ben Simmons, Malcolm Brogdon, whether it's someone else, they need to go sign someone who plays the point guard position so we don't get 10, 15 games into the season going, well, the Kings need a backup point guard. When Dennis Schroeder leaves, everything kind of falls apart, and Malik is being asked to do all of these different things, a scorer, facilitator, all of this different stuff. I just don't see it for Devin at that position, and I think they need to go address it otherwise or in another way.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's still July 18th. There's so much offseason left, but for someone like him, yeah, there might be grass greener on the other side, opportunities elsewhere, but I think if he's on your team, I don't think point guard is in his future. And I think that's not a big stretch. I think this is, if you're going to try to develop those point guard skills, it doesn't happen in one summer. It doesn't happen at one summer league. It's things that have to happen in an evolution of the position from one year to the next with playing time. So having guys like, you know, I think Malik Monk is a good example of that. I mean, he's not a point guard. Mm-hmm. But he's very much a combo guard himself. Zach LaVine, some may scoff at this, but he considers himself to be a combo guard, somebody who is capable of being able to set up the offense and be a primary ball handler in spurts. And I think those are good examples of what he can maybe be. Now, you're right, he's going to be buried in this rotation as the roster is currently situated, but how can he come in and impact winning? How can he come in and light a spark? I think it's funny because I feel where they're – I think I heard you talking the other day. You're not totally out on what this team is. Like, this is a very talented, talented team.
Yeah.
And the way the West is, you know, I'm not really looking at them as being, you know, the most competitive team necessarily from a 1-5, 1-6 or 7 standpoint. But, like, they can win games. They can be a very competitive group. And, you know, get them in a series, who knows what can happen. They didn't have a point guard last year, and I was talking to Scott Perry about that. Like, there's a genuine curiosity of what this team is capable of with a point guard in mind. They have that now with Dennis Schroeder. You've got some pieces that you've been able to add to the roster. Training camp will sort out a lot of these things. Obviously, health is paramount. But, like, you get into December, you get into January, if you can keep your head above water, maybe there's a move or two out there where you can dramatically shift your roster, and maybe that involves somebody like Devin Carter. Maybe it involves somebody like Malik Monk. But decisions will be made, and this is going to be an ongoing process for them. So yeah, you've got a few pieces that might be stopgap in the meantime, and you might have some people that are buried on the depth chart. But there's still a little bit of a roster imbalance in my mind, and I kind of side to you a little bit on this, where I'm not as discouraged as maybe a lot of people are for some of the moves that they haven't made,
yeah,
and some of the changes that they want to see made.
Well, you again, exemplifying why you are the GOAT, you brought up Scott Perry, and I wanted to ask you about your conversation with Scott Perry. He said a couple of things that really stood out to me. One, and this is where I really commend Scott, and I don't know if he knows this, he did not use the word patience. I don't think any Sacramento Kings fan should ever be told to be patient, given what they've had to go through for the better part of the last two decades. But he did say, when you asked him, and I believe your question was, what does this team need the most? And Scott said, this team needs time together. And he said that, and I had two big takeaways. One, he's not down on this team. Maybe it's not perfect. Maybe it's not exactly what he wants. Maybe he's tried to execute a few things over the course of, you know, his first you know, 70-something, 80-something days as the general manager that he hasn't been able to execute. But he recognizes what we were just talking about. There's talent on this basketball team here. And it's going to take time to put this team together exactly the way that he wants to. And those were the two things that stood out to me the most in your conversation with him. Was there anything in particular that stood out to you?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that question too, because that's coming off the heels. When I spoke to him, that was after game one. And if you remember, he joined the NBA TV broadcast and he let it be known that he's still looking at point guard play. And so my very simple, basic question was, what do you need? Thinking he was going to say the same thing, and he pivoted completely different, to your point, to talk about, you know, time together. And I think that was telling, because I remember talking to agent before the season ended, and the notion of now having Zach LaVine on your team, whoever the front office may be, and in this case now it's Scott Perry, but at that time it's like looking at getting value for somebody like Zach LaVine, and the near impossible task not only of trading him, but being able to trade him to get yourself better, and reminding people that's a multi-team trade. Like, Chicago didn't get De'Aaron Fox. Somebody else did.
Yeah.
Right? Chicago got Kevin Huerter. Are you going to say that they got better? No. They lost talent. They got better by maybe removing an awful, awful contract. And I'll be the first to admit there. And there, that signifies something different for Chicago because they're going through a rebuild. But Bulls fans who also have had to remain patient and having a lot of talent on their team and not necessarily equating to wins, like, now they're going through another rebuild. And so I have them in mind when I think of Sacramento, because they do have the likes of both DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine. And it's, I say this all the time, it sounds a little bit like a broken record, but the goal was never to trade to acquire Zach LaVine and pair DeMar DeRozan together. The goal was to get value, winning talent for De'Aaron Fox, because you essentially had a gun to your head and were making this type of trade, feeling the need that you had to do it before the season ends. I would argue otherwise, should have probably waited to the end of the season. I say that in a long-winded way just to say that you ended up with this because based off of talent, and I think there was a desire to move off of DeRozan, realizing then the market plays itself out, and much like Zach LaVine, there's nothing in the market where you feel you can move someone of the talent of DeMar DeRozan to get better in the now. And that's what they're trying to do, is get better in the now. You can argue whether they should or they shouldn't, but this is the pieces that they have. And these two pieces with some roster behind them were able to win 50 games in Chicago. And I know people don't like to acknowledge that as a success, but it is true. I know they're longer in the tooth, but there is a belief that you can have a winning product with this. And it's not championship level, and probably can't sustain playoff success. But if you can just get into the season when teams all of a sudden in the market changes a little bit, these contracts aren't as bad, and they're both very, very movable. And you just have to make sure you get the right move as opposed to the move that doesn't make you better. So, I understand what Scott Perry is talking about. I think he knows the value, the market value of every piece on his roster. And sometimes the best moves that you make are the ones you don't make.
Are you ready to dive into the story, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What do you, Scott told you what he thinks this team is missing, or what this team needs, specifically time together. What do you think this team needs? You're still muted. Sorry, Sean, you're still muted.
Sorry about that. I would agree that there'd be some point guard depth that could be needed, but to me, I think a stretch four, they need in the worst way. I think some wing help, some more size. Is that putting a lot of pressure on people like Drew Eubanks and Maxime Reynaud to come in here? Dario Saric, we'll see what that's like. I don't have a lot of faith there in terms of his health and his availability. It's always plagued him for so long.
I'll point ability.
Out, I thought he was a solid contributor to the Warriors. Yeah, his you know, availability, durability, all that stuff. Like, it's he's a pro's pro, but he's always hurt. So I think that they need some more reliability in size. But wing is kind of where I look at the most. I think some shooting can certainly help. I don't think you need scoring necessarily, but shooting depth is something I think sorely needed. So, it could be fun. And maybe you can answer two of those things. Like, you know, I know you mentioned Ben Simmons. I've heard that chatter. I've had some people tell me that that's not likely. But a player like that that can be an elite defender and ball handler, playmaker, but also having the ability to shoot. And I just don't think Ben Simmons is necessarily a fit there. Yeah. But finding somebody like that that can come in here and add a little bit of rotation balance would be nice.
Sean, get back to camping, man, or your version at least of camping, and tell the old News 10 guys, Brian and Ryan and Dale, tell all those guys I said hello.
I absolutely will. Yeah, crazy times around the campfire.
You guys around the campfire is the perfect visual. It's the survival man episode of The Office. Like,
yes,
roasting s'mores. I'm all for it.
Yeah, roasting s'mores.
Yes. Appreciate you, my friend. Thank you as always.
Anytime, man. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. All right. That's our man, Sean Cunningham, right there. The godfather of sports media here in this market. It did casually mention he spoke to someone who said Ben Simmons not likely. That's a rumor that popped up earlier. I think it was today with our buddy Jake Fisher. And while I'm sure the funny thing about reporting like interest, the funny thing about there being interest in a play. Yeah, like, of course they're interested. They're interested in filling positions of need on their roster. Ben Simmons is a little bit more interesting of a conversation, as Sean was just laying out there at the end of that conversation. He's a little bit more interesting in that Russ, point guard, pure point guard. Chris Paul, point guard, pure point guard. Ben Simmons, he could play the point guard position. He does play the point guard position, but he's also 6'9", and we saw him do some things at the forward position last year for the Los Angeles Clippers. There's always been this thought of like, well, if he just took the ball out of his hands, what could he do? But Sean mentioned something really important. I know James, his partner over the Kings beat, and of course co-host of the Insiders here 10 to 12 on ESPN 1320, mentioned it this morning when they were talking about Ben Simmons as well. Is that if you want to shoot threes, and by all accounts, Doug Christie wanted to do that last year. I assume he's going to want to do it again this year. I don't think you want Domas, who will shoot threes, but a respectable amount, because we all know he won't shoot too many. He'll shoot two, maybe three. Then you got DeMar, and I know he's not starting, but we're talking about a rotation of players. Now we're going to work Ben Simmons into this. Yeah, I'm not sure that's what you want to do. And I understand, like, the idea, the thought. Let's think about it. Let's talk about it. Let's walk through it. Does it work? Yes, no, maybe, pros, cons. In the end, I think you have a player that you never really know what type of headspace he's going to be in. And then you have the fact he just doesn't shoot. He doesn't shoot threes at all. He rarely shoots, period. Now, the Kings have a lot of scores. You know, if you're in there with the second unit, you have Malik out there. Well, maybe Neek becomes a big volume scorer. I'm not sure. It's a little bit different with Ben potentially playing in that second unit. It does add that depth there, but I don't think that's my favorite move. Again, I understand why you talk about it. I understand why it becomes a conversation, but not my favorite. Like Russ and Chris Moore. Like the idea of Russ and Chris Paul Moore. Hate the idea of Devin Carter playing that position. And that's where I'm just going to live at. I do not want them to try to rig the backup point guard position or rig any sort of point guard position. You need a point guard, get a point guard out there. That's easy. Like an actual point guard.
What do you do with Devin Carter?
Not, if he's I don't not care. Your backup?
Like, I mean, as far as like...
Sit him on the bench.
That's
trade
the
him.
Thing. Do you...
Do whatever you can.
Do you try to develop him still? It's like in hopes that maybe when... If Malik's not here or something... I don't know, like... Cause Malik, to me, it's like Malik and Keon, and then there's Devin. But I'm not taking minutes away from those two to play Devin. So do you stash him in the G League to get minutes and develop? Do you attach a pick to him at this point to trade him and just... give him a better situation? Like, what do you do with him right now?
I have absolutely no problem with sending him to the G League. None.
Because he's not, like, when we talk about Devin, like, he's not a bad basketball player or anything like that. He's simply just been drafted to a team where it just doesn't fit at all, and it's just, it doesn't work, and it hasn't worked since he's been drafted. So it's just a matter of, like, maybe you don't want to cut loose on him so early because there might be something there, but again, there's just nothing here where it seems like it fits or it works.
Well, so I don't think that he's a bad basketball player.
Well, that's what I mean. There's still something there you can possibly work with. I don't think the Kings have even scratched the surface with him. It's like last year he just got thrown into the fire and it didn't look great. And then this year you're trying him at a position that he doesn't even play.
And maybe like to go back to your question of what do you do with him. Maybe you either set him on the bench or send him to the G League. I just don't see what his place is on this roster. I mean, I understand that he is a lottery pick from a year ago. But if the reports are true and the Sacramento Kings have attempted to trade him and just can't, I don't know what you're supposed to do. Like, if you don't have a place on this team, you don't have a place on the team. And if I'm Devin, you know, if I'm Scott Perry and I'm talking to Devin Carter's representatives, who I'm sure are going to want him out of Sacramento should that wind up being the case, I look him dead in the face and say, dog, I've tried. I have tried multiple times to trade him. I can't. Our best bet is to send him to the G League. Otherwise, he's just going to be sitting on the end of our bench.
Yeah, because that's where I'm at with it. Like I said, I'm not going to give up Keon's minutes, Malik's minutes, or it seems damn. Now we got to talk about Nick Clifford potentially running that backup guard spot or something. Like, I'm not taking away from those guys.
I'm with you. I'm not willing to sacrifice any of those guys' minutes. Any of them. And Cass, like, I hear you. Cass says he's too good for the G League. Yeah, he probably is. But what do you do with him? What do you do with Devin Carter? Maybe there's... I don't know. You asked earlier this week. I don't remember what day it was, but you asked, like, or maybe you asked in the run-in, are we giving up on Devin Carter too quick? Maybe the Kings don't have a choice.
That's what it feels like. Because it's like, just, I don't see a role for him this season. And if he's not getting run this year, which is really getting just developmental time, like, I don't see a role for him after this year as well.
Yeah, right. So
we're just pushing it off.
That's kind of what it feels like. Just prolonging the inevitable. And at some point, I mean, maybe the situation is different next year. I don't see how it would be. I'm with you. It feels like something that you have to figure out, and you have to figure it out within the next couple of months. Otherwise, you're just faced with a difficult dilemma. You're faced with a difficult situation of sitting him on the bench, putting him to the G League, or, and this to me, this is the worst case scenario. You're trying to force him into a position just to get him minutes that fails everybody.
Yeah, I think that's, like you said, that's worst case. I know that won't work for anybody.
That
it's bad for Devin for the simple fact of, like, he's just not up to speed with the other guys, and it's bad for the other guys because it's going to slow them down.
That's it. And now you're sacrificing wins and losses because you're trying to salvage your lottery pick that the previous front office screwed up. And that's one of the good things about Scott Perry being in play to manage this and not Monty McNair and Wes Wilcox to be in play to manage this is Scott has no investment whatsoever into Devin Carter. If you're Monty McNair, you might feel like we have to We got to show we were right. We got to find a way. We got to prove them, or we got to get value for them. We have to do something with them. Where Scott could walk in here and go, I didn't pick his ass, so it's got nothing to do with me. If I got to sit him on the end of the bench, then I'm going to sit him on the end of the bench. If I got to send him to the G League, I'll send him to the G League. I've tried to trade him three times this offseason, and I can't. I have no investment in this young man. I wish he had played better. I wish I could easily slide him into a rotational spot. I just got nothing for him. And Scott Perry doesn't have that investment. It's not just with Devin Carter either, with the exception of Maxime Reynaud and Nick Clifford. He doesn't have an investment in any of these guys. He doesn't have an investment into the acquisition of Zach LaVine. He doesn't have an investment into the acquisition of DeMar DeRozan. He doesn't have the investment into the contract extension for Domantas Sabonis. He has no investment in any of that stuff. So I think when that happens, you can kind of judge the landscape of your franchise with a little clearer vision.
Kind of been brought up in the chatty house too, but the tough part about sending him to the G League is he might just grow out and average 40 every game. It's like, what is that doing?
Well, what it's not doing is it's not costing the Sacramento Kings victories. It's not forcing them to find a rotational spot for him in Sacramento. And I don't know. Do fans still? Well, I guess they do, because we get worked up by what happens in Summer League. I guess fans would still get fooled by what happens in the G League.
Oh, yeah. There's always the intrigue of a player. Like Mason Jones, we still talk about.
Yeah, Mason Jones scored. Wasn't he regularly scoring 40 last year?
Yeah, I mean, he was putting up damn near triple doubles in like the G League finals or something like that.
Hey, Mason Jones is a good dude, but he's never been able to really crack a rotational spot here in Sacramento.
Yeah, I think in baseball they call him a 4A player. Always good enough to be better than AAA, but never good enough to be in MLB.
And I don't think that's what Devin is.
Yeah, no.
I just think Devin doesn't fit on this basketball team. That's it. It's not that Devin doesn't fit in the NBA. It's that Devin doesn't fit on this current version of the Sacramento Kings. And that's all Scott Perry can worry about. That's all that Doug Christie can worry about. Doug's got a team to coach. Scott Perry's got a team to manage. And if that doesn't include Devin Carter, then it doesn't include Devin Carter. And I know it's easier for me to talk about kind of the, you know, go back to the burning an asset or sinking a cost. I know it's easier for me to do that than for them. But again, Scott Perry didn't invest in this. He inherited it. Scott Perry doesn't have anything to prove when it comes to Devin Carter. That doesn't make the decision, I'm sure, that doesn't make the decision easy for Scott Perry. It'll be tough to look at your roster and go, this player cannot help us. You do it. You're going to do it throughout the course of training camp. This player can't help us. We wish you the best on your future endeavors. This player can't help us immediately. Maybe we have a two-way spot for him. Or maybe we're going to cut you. We're going to let you go. We're going to let you go. Find whatever you. But we'd love to have you back on the Stockton Kings. We'd love to have you back on our G League affiliate. It's tough. Those decisions have to be made. And with Devin, because he is a former lottery pick, there probably is a conversation that's like, hey, we don't have a spot for you. Remember, it was a Luke Walton year. Remember when we talked about the agent putting out the statement about Marvin Bagley, how the team had informed Marvin Bagley that he wouldn't be a part of their plans that season, their rotational plans that season.
Jeff Schwartz?
Is that who it was?
Oh, yeah, I believe it's his agent right now. I believe it was Jeff Schwartz back then, too.
Okay. He was like, yeah, like, this is absurd. It's like, well, it is what it is. Like, they're not going to be happy, but, like, hey, my job is to go win basketball games. If I'm Doug, if I'm Scott, my job is to go win basketball games, and I can't win with your player on this roster. If I could trade them, I would. I can't. And I don't know that Devin Carter can do anything tomorrow. And if the Sacramento Kings play in the championship, I don't know that he could do anything in that game. Because I think I might just be, I think I just might be waiting for Devin to fail, which is terribly unfair to him, but I'll just be waiting. Well, still ain't going
to
work.
It's not waiting for him to fail. I think we all just see, not even the light at the end of the tunnel, just see that there's no path here. I think one way or another, I think this ends with Devin Carter and the Sacramento Kings going their separate ways eventually. Unless you're able to move off of Malik Monk and just this whole guard situation that you have currently opens up somehow, some way.
I would. So moving on from Malik will be, that would be interesting. Part of me feels like with Dennis coming in my feeling you need to sign another point guard, I always say you might have to move off of two of those guys. And I don't know why the Sacramento Kings, I don't know why there were conversations about trading Malik Monk. I don't know.
Just going to state it every time. I hate that.
Yeah, I don't like it either. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just not.
Well, it's
maybe
like
he doesn't fit the vision, man.
Well, that's like, the thing. I think we are seeing every day now that Scott Perry has a, I don't know if it's clear, but has a vision for what he wants his team to look like.
If, well, and I mean, we're talking to a bunch of you. Like if Scott had to get rid of one, Malik or Devin, Malik or Keon. He has to get rid of one of them, Malik or Keon. Which one would you want him to get rid of? I think you're asking fans to pick their favorite child.
Yeah, because it's like I really like what both of them do.
Yeah, in what they do and what they bring is very, very different. It's very different. And you see it right out the gate. Chris says Malik. Stella says, sorry, Keon. Kel says Malik. Matt says, keep Malik over Keon. And throws in, Devin is not good. I like Matt. That's. And then right there, Keon over Malik. Like, it's a. All of this shows, you can't have Devin. And. It also goes to show, like, how are you going to make all of this work? Oh. How is Scott and Doug Christie going to make all of this work?
That's the thing. I don't think you do in offseason number one or even year number one.
No?
It's goes back not to the most popular answer, but it's going to be a little bit of a drawn-out process. I think Scooter called in earlier this week. I think he said you probably really assess what Scott's doing in year three. He's not wrong. Like, you obviously want Scott to do things along the way, but, like, for a finished vision, like it's going to take a little bit.
Well, I quoted that line from President Obama's first inauguration. We might not get there in 1 year. We might not get there in one term, but we will get there. And that's Scott Perry's task right now is to get them there. Where's there? I don't know. Championship contender, Western Conference contender. I don't know, but it's Scott's job to get them there. It's been a fun week. It'll be fun to see what happens this weekend. Like, I will actively be rooting for the Sacramento Kings to win a summer league. This will be their third one. And I remember for the first two, I didn't care. I was just like, oh, that's cool.
I was looking at the summer league roster in 2021, seeing if there was like, oh, yeah, maybe they had a top player from that team. It was like Davion and those guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember who was on the roster in 2014.
Yeah, 14, I wasn't covering the team. Obviously, the 21, we were here. But this one feels different. The chance to win this Summer League championship feels different, and I think it feels different because fans are really in on Neek, and they're really in on Max.
Yeah, I'm at the point with Neek Clifford where it's like, I don't know how much stock to buy into summer league and all that, but I think just given what everyone else has been talking about, like I'm expecting him to just have a bit of an impact day one too. And like I said, watching him play the last few games or whatever, like he plays like with confidence. So I think that'll help him game one. Or he's not putting up all kinds of points, but he's not hurting you either when he's out there.
And that's how we'll end the show today. That's how we'll end the show this week. We appreciate you so much. for being with us. KC will be back next week. Make sure you are locked in here beginning at 10 a.m. on Monday with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Are you ready to dive into the stories, stats, and personalities that make baseball the greatest game in the world? Rob Bradford from the Baseballs and Boring podcast here, and we'll have you covered every day with podcasts that bring you closer to the action, from the bleachers to the clubhouse. Whether you're a diehard fan or just a casual observer, these conversations are aimed to educate, entertain, and most importantly, inform you. Follow the Baseballs and Boring podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.